Namaste and welcome. It's nice to see those of you that are here. We're missing quite a few people today. I think it has to do with the transition. And it's also a nice first day of spring, so I think a lot of people are still out this week. So I'm hoping that we will have many more people next week. We need to get a hold of the people that are not, I'm sure, of the new location. So if we could get a hold of Omja and some of the other ones and let them know where we're at. So I hope that some people have not gone to the old address looking for satsang today because we're not there. We have two visitors from back east. If you'd like to introduce yourselves, that would be very nice. Use your microphone.
I'm Dr. Anupama. I come from Bangalore. Right now we are staying in Detroit.
It's nice to see you. Thank you.
I am Dr. Anupama's better half.
The doctor's better half.
So I'm Sundaresh. I work with Hewlett-Packard in Detroit. So I think we plan to be here in the U.S. for about 2-3 years maximum.
About 2 to 3 years,
yes,
possibly.
Possibly.
Very good. Well, you're always so welcome to come out anytime you're out way. If they happen to send you out this way, you can come drop in for satsang.
Yeah, sure.
And we're always happy to have you here. It's nice to see the Bangalore connection over here, so that's nice. And the minute you find out you're pregnant, I want to know first. Okay, the first question in the satsang bowl today. Is the ordinary mind similar to hell? Absolutely. This is why, you know, Christ was saying that heaven is at hand. It's not somewhere far off, another place. It's at hand. It's here. Once you drop the conditionings and you drop the fears and you drop all these desires that are pushing you, once you go within and you dispel all of these things and all of these coverings that have collected, that drive you, once they're gone, then you find that heaven is here. When the mind is still, you find that peace that passes understanding. It's here, it's now. Okay. What is hell is a mind that just keeps eating at you and eating at you and driving you into unproductive things where you're suffering. Okay? Suffering is hell. This is why when you come, you're supposed to spend time here in your spiritual practice. Because when the physical form falls away, you remain in the same type of consciousness as you were here. If you're in a negative type of consciousness, then you gravitate to a hell realm with others of like minds and temperaments, and that's hell. But it's also hell here as well. When we're not accepting of what we have and we want more, we're in a type of hell. When people think they have to have the latest new thing, the biggest label, the best dresses, whatever, they get themselves into a lot of financial debt. And they're working hard and can't enjoy anything they have. They're in a hell realm. But who has made the hell realm? Has God forced them to be in a hell realm? No. Who puts you in a hell realm is only yourself. And the one that can get you out of the hell realm is guess who? God is the seed of life. Everyone has that divine perfection within them. But it's not seen because we feel separate. And we feel separate, why? Because of mind that only sees separation. It sees the physical as who and what we are, and we are not that physical being. That's only a vehicle for experience in this realm. When you begin to question, what is this I? You go and start into self-inquiry, okay? Am I this mind? Am I the body? Am I the emotions? What holds this in place? This is the value of spiritual practice. To steady you enough that you can witness and see all these patterns that are coming up and then begin to question them. When you begin to question them, then you can start to cut the knots that keep this hell realm in existence, that keep you on this wheel of birth and death. Okay. While we're here, we have a wonderful opportunity to move forward into that stilled place. Once realization happens, it doesn't matter at that point if you're in form or you're not in form. It doesn't matter. Okay? Because liberation is not necessarily having to leave this plane. Liberation is no longer being attached to the rising drama that comes. When there's no longer attachment to the rising drama, then once again it becomes Leela rather than Maya. It's all God's play at that point. The only thing that exists at that point is God. So where is there? Where do you need to go? We seek liberation. We think liberation is getting out of this plane when we're in suffering. When the suffering ends, then what? Where do you need to go? Then you find truly again what Christ was speaking of, that heaven is at hand. It's here. It's now. It's possible. Okay. Could you talk about when hugs for guru are appropriate, if ever? When is it appropriate to hug the guru? Really, in India, this would never be tolerated. You don't touch the guru. You don't even really touch the guru's feet unless the guru gives permission to do so. It's really never appropriate. If that were to happen in India, the Indian devotees would absolutely have a hemorrhage. It's like, you know, when Christ was walking the earth and somebody touched him and he said, "This power has gone out of me. Who's touched me?" Because there's a connection. This is why it's so effective when I'm doing hands-on healing work. But yeah, no, it's not appropriate to come up and hug the guru. In this culture, This is what I was trying to explain. In this culture, everybody is, you know, this is part of the normal thing. Everyone shakes hands. Everyone gives a hug. It's not thought of in any way, shape, or form. But in India, it's quite different. And I was trying to explain this to someone the other day. In India, I never shake hands with any men. They would think you're a loose woman if you did that. And here, it's, you know, they would think you are, you know, stuck up if you didn't shake hands. So it's a totally different cultural thing. And that's something we have to learn when we go to India. We don't think anything of it. Or here you see people wearing shorts all the time. Oh my God, if you went out and you showed an ankle in India, they would be like horrified. You're a loose woman. You're just looking for sex. You're just looking for... And that's not the case at all. But it's a different mindset there. The conditionings are different there. Okay? So every country has some type of conditionings to break through. The way I am here and the way I am in India is different. When I go to India, I wear sannyas clothes. Here, they don't understand it. They don't understand what's sannyas. So if I run around in orange robes all the time, they'll go, oh, you're trying to be special. You're trying to stick out. You're trying to be, you know. So it's a balance, trying to maintain a balance from one culture to another culture and still be able to reach people. But because we have a lot of Indian devotees coming in, you know, we have visitors coming. This is why, you know, it's not because I don't love every one of you. It's not because of that. But just protocol. When it has to do with guru, it's not appropriate. Also, in India, it's not appropriate for anyone just to openly open their mouth and speak to the guru unless the guru speaks with them first. But we're a lot more relaxed here. We're very relaxed here. Okay. I understand the protocol there. I want to keep it more relaxed here. I don't want to alienate anyone. Because other visitors coming, then they get the impression that the guru thinks they're better than someone else, and it's not that at all. Again, and I can only keep reiterating this, there is no difference between any person, whether it's guru or whether it's what they call in India an untouchable. They all have the same divine essence within them. There is only one. There is no separation. What I am, you are. The only difference between a satguru, a realized being, a sage, and someone else that's so-called an untouchable or, you know, regular person, is just that we live within that reality of knowing absolutely, that there's only one. That there's nothing other than that. For the others, there's still this appearance of separation. Okay, and that's all it is, an appearance. This is one of the very sad things, I have to say. And excuse me on this, one of the very sad things about India is the caste system. It hasn't really gone away. And I've spoken about this before, but I don't think we have it on any of the CDs, so I'll speak a little bit about this now again. It used to be way, way back when that the caste system was more built on your proclivities. It wasn't a birthright. You weren't locked into something at birth. It used to be that if you were a realized being, then you were a Brahmin. You were a knower of Brahman. The one that's truly a Brahmin is one that's a knower of Brahman, a realized being. Therefore, they had the propensity to be a sage. to be one, a leader of the people. Okay? To carry forth the spiritual traditions, to understand why they're in place. The ones that were like the Kshatriya class, the warriors, okay, they were geared to more like the Bhagavad Gita, where he was saying, stand up, do your duty, be a man. Don't worry about what's happening with it. There is no death. It's your duty to go out and fight. It's your duty to protect. It's your duty to go forward. Okay? So that was the admonition for that part of that society. Okay? Then we come down to the next class, which are the shopkeepers, the merchants, and those types of people. Theirs was more through karma yoga. Okay? You do your actions, but don't be attached to them as well. Same thing. Okay? So every level of society, at that time, the untouchables, really, it didn't have to do with what your work was, but your mindset. The ones that were just absolutely not interested in anything to do with spirituality whatsoever. Okay. Unfortunately, that's become the caste system then became a bondage instead of a liberating guiding point. This happens so much in so many parts of society. Here as well. Here as well. You know? So things that can be, on one end, liberating can also become a bondage. Like also the family systems. In India, we have the family systems. When you get married, you can marry into your husband's family. So they have a saying in India, when you have a girl child, you're not raising the girl child for you, you're raising it for some other family. Because once they get married, that's it. They don't have a lot of contact with their parental. They have to fit into the family they're being married into. Okay. And there's a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure in India with, as you know, the minute you get married, you're supposed to have a child, and it's got to be a male child. So there is a lot of pressure. Although it's wonderful that a family system can be wonderful because you can be a great aid and support to each other, but it can also be a great bondage when you have people that are, you know, you're expected to do this. And a lot of times when they're married, when they're coming into a new family, the daughter-in-law is the servant. She has to take care of the mother and father. She may have studied all of her life for a profession, and she might be married into a family, and they say, you're not allowed to have anything to do with the profession. Your only job is to be here and take care of the mother and father and to have children, and that's it. So their life is just determined for them. So this needs to loosen up a bit in India. Same thing as here. We have the opposite problem. Families are not connected at all. There's no support. You have children, you have men that get married, they don't take any responsibility for the children, they're off. The women are left with children, having to support them on their own. They have no family to help them, no family system in place. So we have the opposite problem here. We have the opposite problem. So every society, no society, there's not one society that's better than another with this. Each of them have some problem within them that needs to be rectified. Okay. We need to have a lot more accountability in this society. Stand up if you're going to be married and you're going to have children. We need to have more stand-up families that are really geared toward raising those children to give them the values. Because we have a lot of crime now in this country. Why? Because there are a lot of children that are not, they're not supervised. The men in this society have failed the women. I hate to say that, but that's the truth. They want to have a child, but they don't want the responsibilities that go with it. There's a lot of responsibilities to having a family. So this needs to change. Okay. India needs to loosen up a bit in the family thing, and we need to get a little bit tighter. Okay. But also, you know, this is will rectify the more people that get into a spiritual path and understand it. Okay. When there's more respect from the men, and this is another thing, unfortunately, in this country and India, there's not a lot of respect for the women. Okay, this is very common also in spiritual traditions. The women are not as well respected as men. This is absolutely heinous. Because there's no difference between men and women except for the physical form. God is not male, God is not female. The absolute has no gender. Okay, it's not more respecting of you because you're in a male form. You're not ahead of the game because you're in the male form. The only reason you're ahead of the game because you're in a male form because they've shoved all the work to the women and said, well, you take care of the children, I'm going off and do my spiritual practice. You take care of the responsibility. This is not acceptable. It's not acceptable. Okay. There's only one divine essence in all beings, no matter what the form is. Whether it's seen as male or whether it's seen as female, it doesn't matter. So I would like to see these things start to change. The path needs to be also opened more to women. When there are couples, I would like to see couples be able to come to this equally, with great respect for one another. Okay. If you see your partner as Shiva, where you see your partner as Shakti, and you relate to them in that way with great absolute respect, you'll get respect back. If you want divine love, be loving. If you want respect, be respectful. Don't demand it from the other one, yet not give it. Okay. So all of that has come from just that one question. Did we have any questions or comments? If not, then we're moving on. How does one go about letting go of figuring it out? It's a habit and addiction my mind has. I think that if I figured it out, then I have mastered it. You can't figure out realization. Okay? The mind is always locked on. If I can just understand it, then I've got it. But you can't understand realization. It's beyond mind. Okay? You can't think your way there. Impossible. The only way one gets to realization is when the mind utterly stills. In meditation, when you go beyond the mind. Okay. When you're drawn into a nirvikalpa, there is no longer a you. There's no world. There's no you. There's no mind. There's no physical senses, nothing that you're looking at. When there's no you at all, there's only God, only that divine presence, and it is. The mind cannot figure that out. Okay. No one can figure it out and think their way there. This was the problem with, you know, Krishnamurti. Yes, he was realized, but he tried to get people there by dialogue, by thinking their way there. He would always tell people, you need to go deeper, you need to go deeper. But they didn't know how to go deeper, because going deeper is a process of neti neti, not this, not this, not this. That comes with introspection. Okay, that comes like when you're sitting and you're doing vipassana and you see all these things rising up and you're sitting there. Yet you're viewing all these past dialogues, past situations. It all has to do with past. It's nothing to do with right now. All you're doing is sitting. Yet you're having emotion after emotion. Anger will come up. A great sorrow. You remember something else and great sorrow comes. Okay. All these have to do with past things, but eventually you start to see and you start to question all these things that are coming up. Okay? When you start to see it and start to question it, then you can start to cut these identifications. You can go at deeper levels. This takes what? Being still. What does the Bible say also? Same thing. Be still. And know that I am God. Be still. When Moses went to the mountain, what did he see? The burning bush. Take off your feet. Where you stand is holy ground. Well, and wherever you're at is holy ground. This is why realized beings don't have any need to go running here or there to, you know, all of these places. It says wherever the guru is holy ground. It's there. Why? Because we know that there is nothing separate. Okay? It's not more divine over there than it is over here. Okay? There's only the attachment to it and the mental attachment that makes it seem more divine. Because people have put that energy into that place. Okay? But really, there is not one place that's more divine than another. Once realization is there, it's all the same. That's where the Bible also says, wherever I go, there you are. If it's in the highest heaven, you're there. If it's in the deepest hell, still you're there. The only thing that's different is the mental attachments to one versus another. While you're still in the midst of searching, yes, it's fine. Go to pilgrimage, go to sites. It helps you to connect with something. Okay? That helps people to keep their faith, to build their faith. It's a great tool. Okay. But no, and it's the best thing is to find it within yourself. I am that I am. I am that I am. This is what you find out. I am that I am. There is only that divine presence that I am, is. It is. Okay. And mine is the covering of body, form, mind, emotion, is only that pure presence of divine is. The death of all death, the life of all life. That is. Okay. So no, you can't understand and think your way there. It's not an intellectual thing. A philosophy is not it. A philosophy is only a starting point. Just like knowledge of a fruit as a starting place, but when you actually get the fruit and you bite into it, what happens? All that idea you had about it, it's gone. Now you know it, you rest in it, okay, this is what it is. The book. Guruji, it is said that you are primarily interested in working with those who want to achieve realization in this lifetime. How would you suggest that your sadhakas prioritize their lives in terms of time, energy, money, resources, in order to advance rapidly along the spiritual path and achieve the goal of realization? Very simply, in understanding that every moment, every breath is a chance for sadhana. Okay? It's all about sadhana, the spiritual practice. Okay? Every moment is a chance to be in the moment if you do one thing at a time. Develops one-pointedness. Okay? The mind stills. The more you bring it into doing one thing at a time versus multi things, it helps to bring you into stillness. Stopping for a second and doing the balanced breathing once again brings you into the relaxation, into the moment. You have to breathe. Do your practice. Every moment's a chance to do bhakti, to do karma yoga, okay? Open the heart with devotion. Do what needs to be done to the highest of your ability and let go of the effects of it. What am I going to get? Don't do it with the ulterior motive of what am I going to get from this. Okay. All the resources we have are not ours. They're given by God. Okay. When you take a vow of sannyas, everything you have should be given to what? The path, first and foremost, to further the path, to better yourself for society, to find realization. And then once you go into realization, then you can be an aid and help mostly to society. You can't pull someone else out of a ditch if you're still in it yourself. First, climb out. Yes, we need to have food. We need to have a house, a place to stay. Okay, we need to have transportation. These things are important in the world today. But how much do we really need? We need to have covering for our body. But how much do we really need? And what you really don't need, be willing to use it for benefit of others, for benefit of yourself. Okay. The ashram here is for your benefit. We're moving into a larger place, not for my benefit, for your benefit. I don't need it. I would be happy to be in a small hut somewhere alone. Okay, for me that's easier. So we put the ashram in place for what? For the sadhaka's benefit. So you have a place that you can come for spiritual sustenance, you can come for meditation, You can come for hands-on energy work to help move you forward. Okay. This is my commitment to be here for my sadhakas. When you're a guru, you don't get out of seva. You, all of your life is seva at that point. Okay. Whether I'm here or whether I'm flying somewhere else in the world to do seva, to work with others. Okay. So when you have an ashram setting, we need to have more people step forward to do more seva, because I cannot always be here to manage everything. So I need to have some people in place to manage. I need to have Siddhananda in place to do satsang when I'm not here. She's going to start doing some more counseling, some more of the letters, Kundalini particular. Okay. Pramananda is going to stay here for security, start taking some appointments, answering some of the phones, keeping the place clean. Lena's going to take care of the plants. That's her seva. So, all of your life should be one type of seva. If you're a doctor, then your seva is to humanity. You give the best you can to your patients. Okay? You do the best you can. You serve humanity the best you can. It doesn't matter what function you're at. If you're a street sweeper, you sweep the streets as if you're doing it for, if you're a Krishna devotee, as if Krishna were going to be here and you're serving him. It doesn't matter. Okay? But you do it with the attention and intention, not to earn that almighty dollar that I'm going to get when I finish it. Forget about how much you're getting for it or not getting. Just do the action from the heart with love, attention, intention. So important on this path is to develop that heart awareness. Open the heart. Surrender. Those are the two main things. Open the heart and surrender. Heart, surrender. Heart, surrender. Okay. And know that whatever comes is for your benefit. Okay. Yes, the universe is sometimes going to be hard on us. We don't understand why. But really, in the end, it can be either a curse or a blessing, depending on how you see it. You could win $1 million in the lottery, think this is a great thing. And it could be a great thing. It could also be a great bondage. If you're a spiritual person and you win it, $100 million, whatever, and you see it as a way to free up your time to do more for humanity, it could be a great blessing. But if it takes you down the road to buying, you know, the best clothes, designer things, and you wind up falling, what blessing was it? It has become a curse. Okay, so anything that comes in your life can either be a great blessing or a curse, depending on how you see it. Every misfortune also has a seed of fortune in it if we look. Okay, you can have a great tragedy in your life. It can cause you to start digging deeper. Then it has become a blessing in disguise. Okay. So as far as time, resources, put your spiritual path first, okay? Your spiritual path, mankind, if you keep that in mind, that nothing really belongs to us. It's all God's anyway, and there's only one. Keep it in perspective. Okay. If we want to reach realization, the best way is through doing the meditation. Spending more time with the sages, with realized beings. Spending more time with productive things rather than destructive things. Okay. It would be better to come and do the meditation than it would be to go out in the bar and party. Okay. Okay. It would be better to spend time with Guru than it is to once again go out and party. Where's your time and attention? How much time and attention really do you put to the spiritual path and these things versus what you're doing in the world? So if you can get what you're doing in the world, at least get it in a spiritual framework, then you can change it from being worldly into a sadhana, a spiritual practice. Make every breath a chance for sadhana. Make it a living sadhana, part of life, not something you do separate. You don't just sit and do a puja and then I'm done for the day and I go out and do what I'm good for another 12 hours. It should carry through your whole day, every aspect. Okay. So that's it for the satsang bowl, unless we have any questions or comments. It's very quiet when Steve's not here. Usually he has a lot of questions during the satsang. When he's not here, it's like quiet, no questions, nothing. So namaste. Thank you for coming. At this time, we take a break and we have some... You said you did find tea in there?
Yes.
Okay, so we take a chai break and then we will reconvene here in about 15 minutes and have the meditation. Thank you for coming.